You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by FitzDares, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by Thoroughbred Racing Commentaries Global Rankings. Good morning, welcome to the show, thanks for listening in. Important week begins today, Monday, July the 19th, under cloudless, perfect blue skies here in TW11. It is, so said, Freedom Day across the country, where the last of those COVID restrictions are lifted. But as with all walks of society today, horse racing finds itself looking forward in one respect and excited for a number of reasons, but also somewhat uneasy and uncomfortable. Excited because we've got the King George at the weekend. A little less exciting is the fact that Piledriver, one of the great fancies for that race and a real blue-collar hero, is out, as William Muir has revealed to me this morning, and you'll be hearing the reasons why in just a few moments' time. We've got excellent racing in the lead-up to the King George at Ascot this week, much of which takes place in the White Rose County as part of the Go Racing in Yorkshire Summer Festival. You'll be hearing from their general manager, Charlotte Russell, a little later on, as crowds pour into racecourses meaningfully for the first time in 18 months. And with that, slightly alarming news that only 40% of jockeys or thereabouts have even had one COVID vaccination. Is this a case you wanted to yourself for vaccination passports? But that's not all we've got to worry about, because tonight the Panorama programme that we told you about a week ago on this podcast will air. It's entitled Panorama, the Dark Side of Horse Racing. More details have emerged. David Yates is newsboy from the Daily Mirror. Dave, what are we expecting to see tonight?
Well, there are things that I think we know we're going to see, because there was a BBC press release that was embargoed until midnight. The headline claim, of course, is that thousands of thoroughbreds meet their end in abattoirs at the end of their racing careers. As we know, this is a focus on what happens to horses after they've finished racing. The focus is predominantly going to be on the racing industry in Ireland. I understand that no trainer in Britain was contacted by Panorama. The two countries are grouped together as one industry, which, given our relationship, I don't think is unreasonable. That brings in Gordon Elliott, of course, who features three horses, it says, from Cullintra, end up at F. Drury & Sons, which is an abattoir on the outskirts of Swindon. Two of those are named, the third isn't, which is interesting. I've got a theory as to why, but I'm not going to go into it now. F. Drury & Sons is the abattoir, or slaughterhouse, to use a more tabloid word, which will appear in the programme. They are on Animal Aid's radar. We know that. They filmed sheep, calves and goats at F. Drury & Sons in 2010. It's also a matter of public record that F. Drury & Sons have been in the courts. They received fines that total nearly 100 grand for breaches of animal welfare and human health and safety. So that's what we're going to expect. We won't see representatives from the regulatory bodies in Ireland or in Britain. There's a statement from the BHA which says pretty much what you would expect it to say, that they're always seeking to raise the standards that are already high, and that includes before, during and after a thoroughbred's racing career. So that's pretty much it, really. I did wonder whether they should have put somebody up. The plus side is that if you get a good performance by, I don't mean a performance, a good show by somebody who represents the ruling body, then that obviously would state racing's case effectively and compassionately. The plus side, of course, is that that footage can be edited to show, to lend support to the view that the program maker wants to advance.
How difficult do you think the next few days are going to be for the sport in Britain and Ireland off the back of this?
I think that's hard to judge. I think that there are certainly some unpalatable truths that are going to arise from it. Let me just deal with a couple of those, Nick. First of all, racing can only be held responsible for what it's responsible for. And I believe, and I believe that this is a compassionate and a reasonable view, that say, for example, you and I own a thoroughbred. We have a fallout because maybe I don't think you're giving me enough luck on Sunday shifts. We send our horse to a reputable auction house by universal agreement, and that horse then falls into the hands of a person who's unscrupulous. Is that our responsibility? I would say not. I don't think that individuals within racing or racing as an industry can follow animals that that leave the industry for the rest of their lives. I think that one can take responsible, scrupulous, compassionate steps to make sure that when the horse leaves your hands, it is going to into the hands of a responsible person. But beyond that, I don't think that racing can be responsible for the last 10 years, 15 years perhaps of a thoroughbred's life. It goes without saying that footage from any abattoir is going to be uncomfortable viewing. That holds whether the abattoir in question follows the practice to the very letter or not. It's not horse racing's responsibility to police the abattoir industry any more than it's our responsibility to police dog grooming parlors or companies that breed racing pigeons. I think just in summary, though, I think that there is an uncomfortable truth here for racing and those of us who follow the sport. We like to think, I think, that the rural industry is, full of maids sitting on stalls, milking cows called Daisy, sending rosette-winning pigs to a dignified end. The fact is that in the rural economy, just as in the urban economy, there are people who don't meet the standards that we would like them to meet. And that includes those who bring to an end the lives of thoroughbreds. In short, if you engage with horse racing and you bet on it, you have to accept that a large number of thoroughbreds are euthanized before their time, in many cases, a long way before their time. And it's for you to decide whether you think that if that is done in a humane and compassionate way, that is acceptable. If you think it is, you will engage with horse racing. If you don't think it is, you'll go somewhere else.
Dave, for the moment, thank you. We know we have so much to celebrate in this sport. This weekend, we've got potentially a wonderful running of the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Ascot, one of the great midsummer highlights. One horse we were so looking forward to seeing was Pile Driver, winner of the Coronation Cup, trained by William Muir and Chris Grassick. He's not running, as trainer Muir has been explaining to me.
Well, he worked superb on Saturday. I mean, we did exactly the same as we did before. Charlie Orr's Alps is out. We went over Charlie's and he worked stunning with a very, very good miler. But, not seriously stupid work, just the way he done it was just breathtaking. You just thought, well, that's great. I bounced off the gallops, spoke to Matt Chapman on ITV. I walked over to meet him coming back. He was bouncing when he was coming in, washed him down, went to his box, absolutely fine. And then that evening we just thought we'd found he was just slightly wrong behind us off time. And my vet came, because his testicle was pulled right up, so he thinks he may have rolled in the box and tweaked his groin. But we are now going to just do some other tests this morning. He's coming in this morning just to, because, this horse is, not just this horse, any horse that I've got, they're my life, they're my children. I couldn't sort of run a horse that, even if he comes sound and we can't put our finger on what it is, I need to know exactly what it is. And so at the moment, I said to the owners yesterday, look, boys, I think I'm not even going to confirm it's gutting, because he was as well as I could have ever wished to have had him.
Oh, that's such a shame. I was so looking forward to seeing him.
I'm telling you, I come off the gallops and I thought, nothing will beat us.
Fingers crossed it's nothing serious and you can get him back
exactly
in the game.
Well, no, that's exactly right. And there's loads more races. And we can, you know, whatever happens, we're in the Chesmont. So if it's something very simple, he can go there. Well, there's other races. We were going to give him a break at some time to take him all around the world at the back end of the season. So maybe this might be the enforced break. But we have got to do what's right for every horse that I've got.
Trainer William Muir there. Oh, Dave. You really felt for him. Really felt for him. That's a sickening blow for the Muir Grassic team that Pile Driver won't run.
Yeah, it's absolutely sickening. That was one of the most warming results of the summer, wasn't it? Pile Driver's heroic victory in the Coronation Cup. It vindicated his trainer's judgment that horse would be capable of winning a Group 1 race. That was a judgment based on the horse's achievements in Group 2 company, largely at 3. And it's with all due respect to the Coronation Cup, the King George is really the signature all-aged mile and a half Group 1 in Britain during the flat season. And it's a devastating blow that, 5 days before the race, Pile Driver can't run in it. It was shaping up to be, and it still is obviously, a fascinating race. But Pile Driver was a fascinating addition to it. And the fact that we're not going to see him is so disappointing. It's so disappointing for the for those of us who merely want to watch and savour the race. But for connections of the horse, that goes in multiples.
Still, we've got a belter. We've got one of the best older horses in Love against the Derby winner, Adair. That's exactly what this race is supposed to do. Must confess, if I was Aidan O'Brien and I'd just seen Snowfall do what she did at the weekend, I'd be leaving her in and running her. I think she'd win hard-held with the three-year-old fillies allowance, much like Enable did a couple of years ago, particularly with some unsettled weather at the end of the week, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't think it is. I think probably I'd leave Snowfall in. Might not end up running her, but as you say, she's won two Oaks by 24 and a half lengths, I think, according to my maths. And as you say, she'd be getting all the allowances going. And so, yeah, I think I'd be inclined to leave her in. But assuming that she doesn't run, as you say, we've got a real fascinating clash. We've got, it's a battle of the genders. It's a battle of the ages. It's also a battle of the powerhouses, isn't it? In that we've got Love representing Ballydoyle and Coolmore, and we've got Adair representing Godolphin and Darley. So, it's going to be a really fascinating race. I mean, I think that Love's going to start favourite. She's entitled to do that, I think, on what she's achieved over the last, year and 4 months. But it's going to be a thriller. I'm really looking forward to Saturday. It's sometimes in recent years the King George has struggled to serve up what we want it to and what we expect it to, but that certainly won't be the case this weekend.
Right, lots has been happening over this last weekend. Mark Crean, who's on course potentially to be one of the leading contenders for Champion Apprentice this season, has been banned for 28 days after mistaking the winning post on Aerion Power at Doncaster on Saturday night. That's, to all intents and purposes, a statutory suspension. I've been speaking to George Bowie, who holds Mark's licence and who has done so much to nurture his career this season. This is what the young Newmarket trainer had to say.
It's very unfortunate that what happened on Saturday evening happened. And, you know, he's done phenomenally well since he came to us and rides for all of my owners now, really. And I think, you know, he's got the support of all of us. And I think in times like this, you need the right people around to sort of put an arm around him. And I think, you know, he's doing well, but it's tricky.
It's a strange phenomenon because I'd imagine people's polar reactions to incidents like this have always been just that. But what you get now is different media through which you can express extreme emotions. And Mark's been the victim, really, of something similar to what some of the England footballers were the victim of last week. Just tell me how you felt and how you feel he can deal with that now.
I think the best way is probably not to look at your phone, which is quite hard to do in this, you know, this day and age. And I think what people are receiving on social media is, it's very unnecessary, and As you said, the England football players received it last week. I think I was talking to someone yesterday about it's amazing how the social media platforms, you know, let it happen. But I suppose it's probably people higher powered than us that need to change that rule.
And how's he taken the incident in himself? Is he okay?
Yeah, he's fine. He's doing well. He's a strong young man, and you know he will come through it. You know, he's got the support of us, and you know he's been riding in stakes races. He rode at Royal Ascot for myself, for Chrisford's, for a lot of people. And you know he will come through it. But it's, you know, it's just managing it now. And I think he may well appeal it to see if he can get it reduced by, you know, however much we can. But you know, he'll serve his ban. He's obviously very apologetic for what happened, but it was a misfortune, and hopefully it won't happen again.
Trainer George Bowie there on the ban picked up by apprentice Mark Crean over the weekend. 28 days, it seems a lot, Dave, but these bans tend to be commensurate with the consequences of them rather than necessarily the severity of the action, i.e. had he been riding third for fourth, or fourth for fifth, or fifth for sixth, the ban would have been far less than the 28 days. Suggestions he might appeal there from George Bowie? Try and get his standards reduced a bit?
I think I'd be inclined to take that one on the chin. As you say, it's about the consequences, not the action itself, really. No one doubts that this was purely an innocent mistake, a brain freeze, if you like, from a 23-year-old jockey who has made great strides over the last couple of summers. But my own view on that would be take the punishment, have some time off, probably try and have a rest for a bit, because there are going to be plenty of times over the next few years when you'll feel that you need one. So I personally would take that on the chin. That the I was going to call it a side issue, but in many ways it's the issue, and that is the abuse that Mark Crean received on social media on Saturday night. This comes, well, obviously in the wake of the Euro penalty shootout at Wembley last Sunday. The footballers, Sancho, Saka and Rashford, all received appalling abuse on social media. Now, this is something that has happened to Mark Crean, and you know, something's got to be done about it. The tech companies make billions of pounds for, in many cases, just providing a platform for abusers. That's wrong. I hope that something is done about this in the coming months and years, because it's pretty easy to police it. If you want to open a social media account, you just pay 1p with a bank card, or you provide what we would judge to be photo ID, such as a passport or a driving license. So I do hope that we're not going to be talking about this on the NLD in 12 months' time, because it really is very straightforward to sort out. It's just that it's going to cost the tech company, the tech companies, millions of pounds. But you don't keep a heroin factory open because to close it would cost jobs. You close it because it's not good for society. And that's the same principle here. And one final thing on this, Nick, furlong markers, they have to go. Half furlong markers, excuse me, they have to go. Either they should be at every race course or no race course at all. I would prefer the latter. Jockeys know when they pass the furlong pole that it's about 12 seconds to the end of the race. If half furlong markers were brought in to help the uninitiated understand that there's only half a furlong to go to the end of the race, well, frankly, if you need your bottom wiping to that extent, then I don't think you should be going racing in the first place. My contention would be to do away with them altogether. All they do is confuse jockeys in the final stages of a race. It's a trap, and it's an accident waiting to happen. It's happened before, and it'll happen again, and it doesn't need to.
Now, this next subject is even more crucial at present. Today is Freedom Day, so-called, the day on which the final COVID restrictions are more or less lifted around the country. I was shocked, Dave. In fact, I was horrified to read that only just over 40% of licensed jockeys have had a single vaccination, never mind being double vaccinated. And I couldn't believe it.
No, it's a very surprising number, that I must say. For those of us who have had double jabs for a number of months now, it's easy to lose sight of the fact that younger people have had not two jabs, and in some cases, not even one jab. I think that there's been a lot of debate about COVID-19 passports over the last few months, and whether people should be allowed to travel or go to clubs or do their shopping if they haven't got a coronavirus passport, which says that they've had two vaccinations. We're not applying, if we apply that to horse racing, we're not applying like with like. The right to ride a horse in a licensed horse race is not the same as just living your normal life by going to the supermarket or boarding a plane. And in this instance, does this not advance a very strong case for COVID-19 passports? To say to jockeys, this is the deadline. It's the 19th of July today. By such and such a date, you must be able to show that you've had two vaccinations or you will not be permitted to ride. I realise why there is debate and argument about COVID-19 passports in the wider world, but surely in professional sport and in horse racing like this, there is a very strong case for them.
A couple of incidents on Saturday involving one horse that was disqualified at Newbury for interference, another horse at Newmarket that wasn't for a very similar incident, and sparked the debate about inconsistency of stewarding again, Dave. Did you see both incidents? And if so, what was your view?
Yeah, I did. At Newbury, Trape Power beat Home City by a neck and had hung left, and the stewards turned things round. That was at 1:15. And then an hour later at Newmarket, Devil's Angel did a similar thing in beating the other side by a head, and the officials allowed things to stand. We're getting back to that old chestnut about consistency in the way that rules are applied in sport. If you think that the best and most consistent way to apply the rules is for the same team to be in a room, possibly BHA headquarters, using a video link to interview jockeys and to look at the tapes of races, and that is the best way to ensure that these cases are dealt with in a consistent manner, then what happened on Saturday is not in any way going to disabuse you of that view. I think that if you just in terms of sort of like legal precedent, if I can use that rather pompous phrase, if you watched the 1:15 at Newbury and saw that the placings were turned round, if an hour later you then sat down to watch the 2:15 at Newmarket, you would assume that the same course of action would be taken in the stewards' room, and it wasn't.
Well, a huge weekend stateside and great excitement at the opening of Saratoga with fans, and Del Mar likewise. And suddenly you feel that American horse racing has kicked up a gear for the summer. My NBC colleague Matt Bernier is in California monitoring events all around the country at the moment, particularly in Saratoga and at Monmouth Park, where they ran the TVG Haskell over the weekend and was a noteworthy and quite controversial finish, Matt.
Yeah, it certainly was, Nick. Mandaloon put up via disqualification. I think the case can be made that Hot Rod Charlie was again the best, but unfortunately, because of the incident caused with a little bit of a drift into the path of Midnight Bourbon and Deep Stretch, Hot Rod Charlie comes down and is placed last. And Mandaloon, we'll find out what happens with the Kentucky Derby result, but the real scenario in which his two Grade 1 victories both come via disqualification.
Exactly. So the Kentucky Derby result could take, I'm guessing, months, years to decide, but he will get there in the end. He'll get his win eventually.
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting thing to kind of this horse's resume as continue on through the years. If for whatever reason he doesn't win another big event outright by himself, actually crossing the wire first, I'm going to have a very interesting sort of, I guess, perspective of what was he actually? Because I love Mandaloon. I think the talent, he's every bit as good as any of the other horses in this crop. But it's hard to ignore the fact that it feels like when he gets close to the front, he doesn't necessarily finish the job. He gets close and, dare I say, he hangs a little bit. And I think that's an on him. He needs to really kind of put it together, especially if, you know, we're going to be dealing with essential quality again over the summer, and then you're going to be dealing with some of the older horses, and he's going to need to really be able to put it all together, and frankly, to this point, I don't think he has. He's very good, but he's been the beneficiary at least once now, and like you said, in all likelihood twice, to be put up in grade ones that he actually wasn't the best horse.
We'll talk about the ramifications of Hot Rod Charlie's disqualification in a moment, but in terms of the pure merit of his performance, did Hot Rod Charlie enhance his reputation for you? Did he become more credentialed off the back of his first past the post in the Haskell?
Well, I don't know if I would say he's sort of become even better than that coming into it. I think just solidified the fact is one of the best three-year-olds of this crop. Probably right potential quality. From a speed figure standpoint, I fits. He's one of the better horses we have here in this generation in the United States, and frankly, they stack up quite favorably against the older horses. So despite the fact that he yet to win a grade one, I think he deserves to be considered a favorite in any of these races that he runs in, whether it's the Travers at Saratoga at the end of August, if they choose to keep him home in Southern California and run in the Pacific class against older horses. He ran another credible race. He's a very likable horse. And, you know, I still maintain his best game is when they use his speed early on. I know they took him off of it a little bit in the Haskell, and perhaps that's going to be sort of a better suit for him going forward. I still maintain I think he's better when they use him early on because he is that kind of fighter. He's very tenacious in the stretch. So, he just sort of solidified the fact that he is one of the best horses that we have. Not just of the three-year-olds, but of any dirt horse here in the United States.
Okay, so a genuine contender for the Travers and then possibly for the Breeders' Cup Classic a little later in the season at Del Mar. As far as Hot Rod Charlie's DQ goes, he was disqualified because he came across the path of Midnight Bourbon. Midnight Bourbon went down. Paco Lopez was stretchered off. He's now okay. The horse is fine as well. That's the good news. Flavien Prat, rider of Hot Rod Charlie, suggested that had he been able to use his whip once in his left hand, this wouldn't have happened. And of course, this is controversial because Monmouth Park don't allow use of whips now. What's your take on that?
Well, I suppose it's possible, and keep in mind, I'm not someone who's ever been on the back of one of these thoroughbreds, so it's easy for me to sit here and say what could or couldn't have happened, but I think it is one of those things. Mandaloon did drift out a little bit toward the inside, and some folks have wanted to bring that up, that perhaps he was just as much a cause of the entire incident as Hot Rod Charlie was. I still maintain the rider has enough control at that point, I think, to be able to kind of maintain that path, and I think Hot Rod Charlie came in kind of by decision, by choice, to get closer to Mandaloon to re-engage and try to finish at the end. So, you know, again, perhaps a left-handed stick would have prevented this from being an issue. There's a part of me that thinks there was probably a method to the madness of coming in a little bit anyway. You wanted to kind of re-engage in deep stretch and make sure that you were going to continue on with the mount. So I think it's an easy, I don't want to call it an excuse, but I think it's an easy way to put things when in reality I don't know that it would have made a great deal of difference.
NBC's Matt Bernier there. Dave Yates is with me. Dave, I thought you'd be interested in this case as Flavien Prat half sought to blame Monmouth's whip rules for this incident, and this was appropriated by the strong lobby led by Hall of Famer John Velasquez, who have strongly opposed the abolition of the whip for encouragement at Monmouth Park.
Yeah, I think that this can be dealt with in by looking at a specific issue and the wider one. The specific issue is that I believe the statute at Monmouth Park allows for the use of the whip for safety purposes only. Why Flavien Prat couldn't used his whip for safety purposes, then gone into the stewards and said, I want you to look at this, the rerun of the race, and I want you to listen to my contention that I was using my whip here not for purposes of encouragement, but for those of safety. And then obviously it's up to the stewards whether they believe that version of events or not. That's the specific one. I think in a general case, and as you know, I'm a fervent supporter of the use of the whip in horse racing. Encouragement within ethical boundaries. And I think it's really important that those of us who believe what I believe, and by the way, if you haven't contributed to the whip study and given your views on that yet. You must do so, particularly if you agree with me. But I think it's incumbent on us to state our case without using a false beard. I think that the use of the compressed foam, the Procus whip in horse racing, is an ethical and a supportable, defensible thing to do. And I don't need to stray into, it promotes safety in races or anything like that. Fundamentally, I believe that in order to define the fine margins that establish champions, the use of the compressed foam is essential and it's justifiable. And we don't need a false beard of safety. Of course, safety is an important issue. It's the most important issue. But I think that if we do that, I think that people who might not agree with what we say, and I apologize, terming this in an us and them way. But I think that if we do use false beards in our argument, or sort of Trojan horses, if you like, that those who maybe don't agree with what they're saying can point to the fact that we're using a Trojan horse and that we're being a little bit disingenuous with our arguments. I would stand up in a forum and argue with anybody the case as to why the Procus whip should be used in horse racing, and I don't need to be disingenuous in order to advance what I think is a very convincing case.
So regulations changing today and restrictions lifting, and that is very timely for the ever popular Go Racing in Yorkshire week, which got underway Saturday the 17th of July and runs right the way through until this coming Sunday the 25th of July, and still so much to enjoy with racing at Beverley this evening, then Catterick on Wednesday, then Doncaster Thursday evening, Thirsk on Friday, York on Friday evening, York Saturday, and Pontefract on Sunday. And I'm joined by Charlotte Russell, who's the general manager. Charlotte, this is a tremendous initiative and has been going a little while now, hasn't it? Just tell me how it all started.
Well, yes, Nick, you're right. We're in our 12th year now for the Go Racing in Yorkshire Summer Festival. It started when our then chairman, Simon Shannon, was looking through the racing calendar and noticed a week when, at the time, all our flat courses all raced in the week, so set about sort of putting it together as this festival to showcase racing in Yorkshire, and it's just gone from strength to strength, really.
And for people who are living in other parts of the country or who are listening from abroad, just give everybody a flavour of why racing in Yorkshire is different or unique.
So we have got 9 fantastic racecourses in Yorkshire. They are all very different, and if you follow our social media channels, we've been putting together a series of videos showing why they are different and unique, but all brought together by this strong Yorkshire brand. I mean, the teams at the courses themselves are major allies and really do work together. We've got the most beautiful settings for our race courses, and we've got everything in Yorkshire. We've got racing for every type of horse, from class sixes to group level to classics at Doncaster. We've got in the county, we've got the racing school, we've got the sales centre, we've got Jack Berry House. I mean, as a county, we are so self-contained when it comes to racing that we've got it all to show, and we want everyone to come and see it.
And there will be awards this week, won't there, for leading trainer and jockey? I know those are incredibly keenly fought through the week.
They are, that's right. So we've got leading trainer, which is sponsored by Goldsborough Hall. Leading jockey is sponsored by Skybet. And Skybet have also come up with a new initiative this year for the leading yard. So for all the Skybet races, of which I think there are 22 throughout the week, they are going to tally up the best turned out, and the yard with the most wins at the end of the week wins a cash prize, and they're going to put on a bit of a party for them. So that's something really nice to reward the hardworking stable staff as well. Back to the so far this week, Joanna Mason made an absolute storm on Saturday at Ripon with a treble, and so she is currently the leading jockey, and she's got 3 nice rides at Beverley again tonight, so hopefully she can cement her place at the top a bit further. And we've currently got 4 trainers tied on 2 wins each, so that is yet to unfold as the week goes on.
And I suppose it'll be a slightly different type of crowd to what we've been used to even in the last few months when there have been a few people allowed into the racecourses, because this is probably the first time this week where you're really going to see families at the races again.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, we saw that at Redcar yesterday, which is Sunday meeting on a lovely day, was very popular with families. The evening meeting at Beverley tonight traditionally attracts some families. So yes, it's great to see the return of a family unit coming and enjoying the races together.
And getting that evening meeting back to York a decade or so ago was quite a notable turning point in their history.
Yes, and so of course they've got some excellent racing, and they've also got it's their music showcase weekend. So they've got Rick Astley on Friday night and McFly on Saturday. So that really adds to the festival element. It's keeping the entertainment both on and off course, and showing showing what Yorkshire's got to offer, really.
Thanks to Charlotte, and best of luck to everyone competing in all the races at the Go Racing in Yorkshire Summer Festival. It's a terrific initiative, and I think that's where you're going today for your tip, David.
Indeed, 6:15 race at Beverley. The bottom one, Burton Wood, £2 out of the handicap and out of form, but a very good record over 5 furlongs on the Westwood. 15 attempts, 10 of those have been comprised of 2 victories and 8 efforts in the first 4, including 5 defeats of less than 1 length. If Burton Wood can return to his best at Beverley here, then a mark of 56, even allowing for that £2 out of the handicap, is well within range. 6:15 race at Beverley, selection number 17, Burton Wood.
Burton Wood for Dave. Thank you very much for listening on what's been an extremely busy news day. Tomorrow we will be back to do it all again, when we will be reflecting on exactly what has appeared in that Panorama documentary. We'll see you again. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.